I'm Zach. I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
This is going to be a panel workshop broken up into four sections. We have Arnór K., whose name I butchered, from Iceland here, and he's going to talk to us about a couple different things. First, the first panel will be carrying the message, where and how to find drunks, and how to handle a wet drunk. He will talk on this for 40 minutes. After the 40 minutes, there will be 20 minutes for questions. Just so everybody understands, a question is a sentence worded or expressed so as to elicit information. Okay? So I give you Arnór.
Yep. Just need to get my vice out of the way. Zach. He was going to give me a piece of paper on the stuff that I was going to talk about, and he said, "Sure, no problem." And it's nowhere to be found. there you go. And yeah, this is handwriting, dude. So, is this on? Yeah. Okay. Good. I was, like, some of you know, I've seen your faces during this week. I've been nationalized. I've been had speak because I'm fresh blood. I'm fresh meat. You haven't heard me before, and the If you're familiar with the word trolling, you know, as in, you know, being a bully online, the bullies that told me to take a detour to New Orleans, they said, "Yeah, we're gonna have you do this," and I'm not an expert on alcoholism. I do, however, have a few thoughts on the subject, and hopefully a bit fewer words than thoughts. I remember that this thing here reminds me of the time that I get sober in late 2000 or late last century, as I like to put it, and I come into AA, and I don't like anything that anybody has to say about anything. I'm combative. When I meet my wrangler here at a meeting, I remember that his version of the story is that, oh yes, he's not a step guy. He's not one of those step fundamentalists, and that was because I looked like a serial killer. And that was just the glint in my eyes. I said, "Angry young man." And the reason I'm talking about this, and the reason I spoke about this during the week, is that I don't want, and that's the last thing I want, is I don't want to seem like somebody who brings the stone tablets down the mountain. I don't want to tell you what to do. I don't think, I was once drinking Icelandic moonshine, Landi, or country man, as it's called, and I come out of a blackout in downtown Reykjavik, and I am discussing religion, or arguing religion and a lot of delusional ideas on religion with guys that are members of a congregation called Maritas. And Maritas are known in the Nordic countries. They basically help a lot of IV drug addict. I come out of a blackout and I'm winning the argument. That's the mindset I bring into AA. I don't want to be told what to do. The guys that told me what to do, that I needed to get a sponsor, that I needed to do something, didn't impress me. The guys that I came into AA and I went, impress me, motherfuckers, you know. Just tell me something I haven't heard. Show me something I haven't seen. Because, you know, fate worse than death is better than death. And fate better than death is worse than death. You know, you haven't seen my hell. You haven't done what I've done, and I haven't seen yours. And, you know, that was a mindset that I came into AA with. And if anybody, all the guys that did sound like experts, that did know exactly how to do things, how long to pray, how many meetings to make, how many, you know, what constitutes an amends, what constitutes a thorough inventory, they didn't impress me as much as the guys that didn't want to do it, but did it anyway. There's this one guy, and he's still sober, and he's doing fine. He has a family. He shared the story during his talk that he had this small VHS-C camera with the small VHS tapes, and he videotaped himself after coming back home and pointing at the camera and basically shouting at himself, don't do it again, don't do it again. It's not worth it, it's not worth it. Then he took the video out, rewound the tape, put it in the adapter for the VHS, and put it on a shelf by the door, and a piece of paper saying, watch this before you go back out. The reason he was sober, I haven't done that. I haven't done that. I'm one of the delusional alcoholics. I don't know. I have no idea this is wrong, or this is not working. I have no idea what I don't know what's wrong with me when I come into AA. But he shared the story of making amends that changed my life. He made amends to his uncle that had sexually molested him. He made amends to him. He didn't go and say, sorry, uncle, that you molested me. He said, sorry, uncle, that I used to talk about you behind your back and use your sickness against you to get me free of, to basically redeem me in my alcoholism. And that is something, while you're there, and this only happens to the fellowship. This doesn't happen on speaker tapes. This doesn't happen in the book. But this happens on a one-to-one or in a speaker meeting session. And that basically nuked and paved my mindset on what this stuff is about, what AA is about. At that point, I'm doing inventory and I'm doing something, and it seems as if you're walking, there's not a lot of hills here in New Orleans, but it seems as if you can do step work a certain way as long as you're walking uphill. You're walking uphill, and as long as it's hard or tough or strenuous, you do fine. You're sober, your membership in AA makes sense. But when you reach the top, well, not the top, it's not a summit, but it's more like a plateau, okay? Then things get funky. I come into AA, I don't want anything anybody has to give me. I fight the guys, I read this book here is the translation of the big book that I grew up with. I read this book defensively to find the loopholes. I don't want to do anything until a critical mass of people have shared stuff that is a bit more than physical allergy, mental obsession, spiritual malady, and there is a solution. What? And it's here in chapter, in the second chapter, page 18. But the ex-problem drinker who has found this solution, who is properly armed with facts about himself, can generally win the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. Until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. It's facts about myself, you know. And the facts about myself have been the same the whole time. I do the exact same steps. I do use the same exact same big book. But I'm a bit more unrelenting, ruthless, or grim than I used to be. Because I thought alcoholism was just about, you know, fixing alcoholism was just about getting sober. And it's not. Like if you heard me during the week, it is not. I went batshit crazy. That's why the troll in the back he really liked that there was another new guy coming into AA that wasn't working step because it fit his, you know, way of doing AA. And so I do step work, and I start with my biggest amends, because I knew in my fifth step, I knew that if I wouldn't tell this guy who was hearing my fifth step about that one thing, AA would never be real. It would never be authentic. It just wouldn't. So, of course, that was the last thing I mentioned. And he was eating French fries and like it was going out of style, and he lost his appetite. And he said, "You can drink on that for a long time. You had to have something. You can drink on. There had to be something that you can drink on that for a long time." So. And that thing. So I start doing my amends, but I'm still trying to fix myself. But what does the big book say about that? It says that that's not an end in and of itself. Our main purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and people around us. And you know, so there's a method to the madness. There's a method to the madness. I'm not just, you know, I don't have anything scripted. I have a big book, and I have some squigglings from Zach here, and I have my experience, and I'm translating on the fly. You know, this is not something that is set in stone or licked into marble like we some of us say in Iceland. There is no way. What the method, however, is. You know, I would sit in that meeting, and I get these visions. I've started telling about my vision stories, but I'm sitting in a meeting, and somebody is at the podium, and I feel like there's a puzzle hovering in the air, in front of the podium, and he says, yeah, and that physical allergy, and I was stamping on boxes, and I was going nuts, and I was, you know. That's the physical allergy, and I would get a piece of the puzzle, and then he would say, yeah, and then I wrote everybody down I hated, and la, 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 and I got a piece of the puzzle, and I got a piece of the puzzle, I got a piece of the puzzle, and during the meeting, which is usually an hour and 15 minutes, you know, I would get a piece of the puzzle, but there would be something missing in the middle, and doing AA as a guest, as a guest, as a receiver, was the reason that I didn't see or didn't get that last piece of the puzzle. Because, you know, if we go to page one of the big book, first printing, which was the doctor's opinion, then the doctor says, in the course of his third treatment, he acquired certain ideas concerning a possible means of recovery. As part of his rehabilitation, okay, his own, that is, he commenced to present his conceptions to other alcoholics, comma, impressing upon them that they must do likewise with still others. Period. New sentence. This has become the basis of a rapidly growing fellowship of these men and their families. There is a program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's in the big book. And it is expanded upon in the 12 and 12. And we get a lot of context from Pass It On. We get a lot of context from Pass It On and Dr. Bob and the Gulag Times. And then, you know, the really nerdy of us, if you know any AA history buff, dude, talk to them. Get the stories. Go to what's called Big AA History Lovers or something. It's a website. And it talks about the story of Fred. What the context of that story is. And it's because, you know, these are words on a paper, like, right? But this is just like a recipe for bread. There is no... This recipe only acquires meaning, its fullest meaning, when you bake a bread out of the recipe. And if you only bake a bread for yourself, you are losing out. Okay. So I've started doing steps, and I've done something, and I feel like Wile E. Coyote. It's like everybody is going beep beep and pew, and I just and no, really, and guys are that have been short a lot long, you know, they, I have by that time I've started working steps, so I'm basically 8 months sober, and I've started doing my amends at 10. And these guys are flourishing, and I'm not. Because, why? They are working with others. They are carrying a message. And I didn't feel like I could. I didn't feel like I could. Because I hadn't learned all the tricks. I didn't really know how to show them how to do inventory. My first four-step inventory was random. It was, you know, there's a bit of force in chaos. It wasn't even chaos. It was more like a Jackson Pollock than Picasso. You know, it's more like just whatever, and. And I talked to my sponsor about, you know, why do I feel like that? I've been sober 10 months. Why do I feel like that? And he said, it's time to sit down and read the next chapter together. And I go to his house, and we sit in his kitchen, and he says, okay, go to page, well, what is here, 89. And read. And he's there, and he's, you know, just going from... He's an asshole, you know. He really is an asshole. He has this thing that he seems to watch himself more than he pays attention to others. He says, okay, read, and I read chapter 7. Working with others. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when others other activities fail. This is our, and then he would go, stop. Go back. What, read again? Yeah? Okay. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our, and then he would stop me again and have me read it again. And then I would read it when I would ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. And then he stopped and said, what do you think that means? Okay, I know enough people in AA who know enough of the history of AA to know that this is not a grammatically correct. This is not grammatically correct English. Not all of it. Okay, it's not a quality piece of literature. It's not the guy who wrote it. Basically, most of it, he had 4 years sober, which is not a lot today. There is not a lot of insight. There's not a lot of, you know, this is not like a religious text that has been polished and made better over the centuries, like the European fables, you know, fables like Little Red Riding Hood and Iron John. I recommend that women who are desperate enough to check out why they're so fucked up, why they feel fucked up, and I only mean the fucked up women, you know, check out the original Little Red Riding Hood. It's good stuff. The Disney version is very PC, okay? the part with Little Red Riding Hood eating her grandmother's innards and drinking the blood. It's good stuff, and it tells a story. And this is not one of these pieces of literature. It's not that deep. It doesn't have all that stuff. It doesn't have the wisdom of the ages distilled into a few words, like fables do. But at the same time, this book is written from a point of view. Something amazing happened, and it was amazing. They didn't know what was going on. They didn't realize, they realized they had something big, so they started writing a book, and this is the result. And they write, their own practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. I heard somebody at a meeting talk about alcoholic number three. His name was Bill Dodson. I highly recommend alcoholic 2.5, the one that didn't get sober. Dr. Bob's son shares about that in one of his talks. But he eventually got sober, that guy, you know. Their experience was that if you work with other alcoholics, and not just work with other alcoholics, but intensively work with other alcoholics, that nothing, you know, no prayer, no meditation, no inventory, no nothing, nothing, it works when, and in the multilith version of the Big Book, other spiritual activities fail. They removed that from the first version for some reason. It works. If you really want to be sober, work with other alcoholics. Work intensively with them. If you want, you can talk to Zach about what intensive means, but I'm going with, it's a lot. You know, it's a lot. It's not something that is easy, or it's not something that is, like we say in Icelandic, snirtilegt. It's not something neat. It's not something that fits my schedule. It's not something that fits with the rest of my life, necessarily. So, some of it does, some of it doesn't. It's intensive. Okay, and then it continues. Then we have a new paragraph, which is in literature means there's a new thought. Okay, life will take on new meaning, and I would get that last piece of the puzzle, right? to watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, which means that you need to be in a fellowship to watch it grow, you know. This is not a solo program. Sorry, it takes a village to raise a child. That's just the way it is. Okay? To have a host of friends, this is an experience you must not miss. Who? Oh, the guy who is going to be a sponsor. No, the AA member who wants to be sober. He does not want to miss this stuff. Okay. We know you will not want to miss it. We know. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. And then in the multilith version, there is another sentence that they removed. And it goes like this. The kick you will get is tremendous. The multilith version, for those who don't know, is the original manuscript. That's the proper name is the multilith version. That's the manuscript they passed around. The kick you will get is tremendous. Because, you know, I thought I had a problem. I'm going to my first meeting in the car that I bought from Mom, paid the first payment, the down payment, but nothing more. And I'm feeling sorry for myself, not having a job, not having a girlfriend, not getting things my way. And now they want to tell me it's that I'm also an alcoholic. I didn't come here to. I came here. It doesn't even make any sense. My train of thought at that time didn't make any sense. It was just. It was gumbo. It was coleslaw. It was just, yeah, whatever. But there is a thing here in chapter 5. You probably, some of you may have read it before. Rarely have you seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to the simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. And I thought, yeah, this is about honesty. This is about not stop. Yeah, I should stop stealing at work. You know, it's about you have to do AA in a way that makes sense. You have to do AA that is not just filling in the forms. And it's not about just, you know, dotting the I's and crossing the T's. It has to be something. And being on the receiving end of AA in strong AA like I got sober in, that was a strong fellowship. They would call you out on your shit, and they would heckle in meetings, but they would heckle old-timers only. You can learn a lot of stuff, right? But it's nothing. It is, in the grand scheme of things, when I look back, it's nothing. It's just enough to get me interested. Yes, sure, I wanted to be debt free. Sure, I wanted to be able to sleep without killing everybody, you know, during the night. Sure, I wanted that stuff. And I got enough personal experience, like the story I shared in the beginning, that I thought, yeah, maybe this is something that I should take a look at. And no, I don't want to because it's God and it's something and something. And you haven't, you know, those guys hadn't even been to a Bible course like me, you know. They knew nothing, okay? But honesty is honest with results. How is it going? Honest with your train of thought. How is it going? I'm 6 months sober, and I'm talking to my sponsor, and I'm driving my car, my stolen car, you know. It's Mom's car. She doesn't need the money right now, and you know it's okay, but. And I stop at this gas station where there's a vacuum and something. And I'm talking on the phone like this, and I'm, I'm going through all the shit in the car, and I'm taking out the old bottles and throwing them in the trash. And my sponsor is talking to me about that. Basically, he's giving me a summary of what the steps are about, and he's up to step 9, and it's about cleaning up around you. And I go, yeah, like I'm doing right now. And he could have told me, oh, I'm 6 months sober. I've been to a meeting every day. I've been, I'm clueless, right? And he could have said, oh, you're such an idiot. You know, he would be fully justified in saying, oh, you're such a fucked up or whatever. But he said, yes, but there is a bit more. This book in your shelf is a tool waiting to be used. It's a tool. The steps, even the steps, are not an end in and of themselves. They are guides to progress. They are not something that I worship. I know some really, really, really interesting stuff that you can do with inventory. I shared about that at a meeting this week, or a bit of it. But it's not a magic bullet. It's not a silver bullet. The silver bullet, my membership in AA is about what I do for others. That's 80% of of my life, of my recovery, is what I do for others. It's about carrying a message, and it's about one-on-one. It's not from a podium like this. It's not. Sure, I can go up in a meeting in Oslo and give them a 5-minute version of something, but sitting down with a newcomer is the most important thing. And so, if I paraphrase what I've said. The most important thing, the first thing, the requirements to be able to carry a message so that the other end will receive it. The first item is you need to have time to do it. There are two schools of thought, right? There's one that organizes and plans everything to the extreme and then come back with a bipolar 2 diagnosis, okay? And then there's the guys that don't plan anything and they can't be relied on. We need to do something in the middle. If I don't have, my method, and that's just my method. I live in Norway and it's totally different. There is totally different from Iceland, just totally different. But I have to do something with that. I need to be able to, do AA in a way that makes sense to me. And that doesn't mean that it has to be on my terms, okay? So I show up at a meeting with a cup of coffee. And from time to time, the troll will snatch a newcomer. And we'll go out and eat with them. And we take it from there. The most important thing is that I have time. If I don't have time, it doesn't matter how excellent my program is. It's of no benefit. And my excellent program for myself is not really worth anything for me. Really. I've done some cool shit in AA. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I can't really go and, but 4 years ago I was so, No, it's what am I doing now? It's the RPMs in the dashboard, not miles traveled. No, that only means you have a shitty car if you. And it's not the speed you're traveling. The gearbox, I'll take this bitch up to the 13th gear. No, how effective you are? No, I don't get any peace from that. I don't get any. I don't get anything from that. I get for my effort. The RPMs on the engine. That's the return, okay? I need to have time. And I need to have fucked up my life. Because nobody is going to listen to anything I have to say coming from a place of, yeah, but I never did that. I never did that because, you see, I'm so smart. I don't really have alcoholism, you know. They won't trust anybody except... They will only... It's easier to trust somebody who has screwed up their life. So be open about the screwiness. Be open about it. You know, that's why I talk about peeing my pants and puking on every square inch of my body except between my ass cheeks. You know, it's because that's the kind of guy I am. You know, I screw it up. And that story from Denmark. You know, finally when I get to the, you know, I'm gonna go to the school. You know, I go to Denmark. I go to a priest in Iceland and I cry. I'm in Denmark the next day and I'm gonna go get an education and I get a place to stay and I'm feeling sorry for myself in the bus that I have to take this route every morning to school and yada 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 and I go down to the square and I. You know, I'm standing there, and there's this town square, small town, you know, nice, pleasant town outside of Copenhagen, called Gladsaxe, if you want to look it up on a map. And I'm standing there, and there's this brick wall / tree fence or whatever around the compound. And I see there's a road into the compound, and there's a sign, and it says office. And I'm standing there, and I'm thinking to myself, I will never, ever cross this road. And I turn around, and I go to my room, and I drink some more beer. That beer that you can get 8 beers for $1, okay? The margarine aftertaste beer, you know. And thinking that I'm totally in control of my life, okay? These stories, they show that, sharing these stories shows that you have alcoholism. That you are a man who has lost the power of choice and drink. If you've lost the power of choice and drink, you are okay with what I call requirement number 2. Number 3, you need to have done something about it. There is nothing in this book about getting yourself a sponsor, let alone, then there's nothing in this book about your sponsor having to have to be 2 years sober. There's nothing at all. There is not even a hint in the direction of getting yourself a sponsor. Not a hint. If you find it, let me know. I've read this book a lot, in 3 languages. You know, it's not there. It's mostly about, you know, it's the invisible rowboat. That story you guys have. You know, just get in the boat and row, you know. Yeah, but it doesn't make any sense. Yeah, but we're sober, dude, you know. It's... And when that is there, you are able to carry a message. That is many... It's an order of magnitude more important that you get someone's trust than the fancy-smancy stuff, you know, the consequence list or the powerless and powerlessness list or whatever. All that stuff is secondary. Get them to trust you. And you can't do it if you come down the mountaintop, from the mountaintop with it. You know, I'm here as a fuck-up. How do you prepare for this? You know, I drink moonshine, okay? That's the stuff I do. You know, I pee my pants to until the salt from my urine makes the mattress crunchy, okay? You know, I'm not an expert. I'm just trying to do my very best. And I use this book. I use this book, and I doubt myself, and I doubt the stuff that I hear in the rooms. I doubt everything, and I try anything. Yeah, thanks.
So now will be the question and answer period. So how we will do this, you will raise your hand, answer the question, either myself or Arnor will repeat it into the microphone. And please remember, a question is a sentence worded or expressed so as to elicit information. We'll go by show of hands. Yes, sir. Hi, Shane. Shane wants to know if this is an honest program.
Well, an honest program. I honestly don't know what that means, but... Kidding. So I thought honesty was about not stealing and not lying and not something, but my experience shows that it's a bit more. You know, I'm responsible for my actions, my reactions, and my inactions. And it's, I need to be honest in all three. The definition I used is based on an Icelandic expression, and it translates really difficult, but it's standast skoðun. It checks out. Think of your program as something that you write, you know, that you write down to, like, books. You know, not a book, but you put it on the books. You write something down, and you have 24 hours, and you have a child, and you have something. You have you have to go to a iron lung, you know, 2 hours a day or whatever. You have stuff that you absolutely need to do. The honesty of it is being so open with it that you can write it down, everything you do, and show it to somebody else. You don't have to show it to everybody else. It's just that if anybody finds out, that's okay. Yeah, he didn't have time to make his home group, make it to a meeting at his home group every week because he has his child every week. You know. And yeah, if you don't have a child and you pretend like you do, you're dishonest, you know. It's not about lying, you know. We have two different words for honesty and lying, and there's a reason for that, you know. It's honesty is more about doing everything you do with a whole heart. And if you want to do this program, have asked, that is allowed. But the results are basically dictated by your honesty. You know, how fully, you know, how deep down into the ground you press the plow. To give you an expression. Mike.
I say that because, of course, when is the time to stop the response?
Good question. Okay, so to repeat the question, Mike asked, when was a good time to start sponsoring? And to give you I'm not just saying this to be funny. As soon as you stop throwing up, a good time. So if there's a book called How It Worked, and it's out of print, but you can get the PDF for free online, and it tells the story of Clarence Snyder, the guy, the founder of AA in Cleveland. And just to give you a summary of his story, he's drinking. He is the reason that they have bars in the cellar windows in the Midwest. He is the reason that they put extra padlocks on bars, you know, after closing. His story, he's basically in the end, he's drinking something from tins that can only be bought in wallpaper stores. He is basically spastic from drinking. And he comes to Dr. Bob, and he has this, you know, and he heard about the Akron axe murderer, and he, you know, he's paranoid, and he's the axe murderer, so he splits, you know, comes back to something 2 months later or sometime later, and he says, I'm willing to take the chance of him, of Dr. Bob being the axe murderer, so, because he's had it. He's had it with drinking. And he wakes up with Dr. Bob screaming at him, do you believe in God? And he gives out, yeah, well, what is belief? And, you know, when do you believe? And Dr. Bob yells at him again, do you believe in God? And the guy answers, yeah, I guess I have to. Great, that's the answer I wanted, says Bob. And they go down on the knees. And after a week, he's basically just getting the cramps out of his body, you know, the stiffness. Then Dr. Bob tells him, go to Cleveland. And he's asking, what should I do now that I'm sobered up? Go to Cleveland and fix Remy's. And that's the answer. And he goes to Cleveland, and he goes to this bum house, and he finds the perfect newcomer, a guy who had pissed his pants, and he was frozen to the ground, and he scrapes him up and takes him to the guest house he's staying at, and he thaws him, and he called him the perfect newcomer because he had something called alcohol paralysis. He could only swallow and blink his eyes. And according to the book and what Mitchell told me, that guy never drank again, if I remember correctly. A good time is, well, like one American in my group in Oslo says, how about right now? Yeah, do you need to do amends? Yeah, how about right now? Do you need to do inventory? Yeah, how about right now? Now is always a good time to start this stuff.
And that's been. He talked about being open to Ponzi's guys working on screw ups. And you kind of translated being in the bed, messed up stuff that you used to do. What if you're still really sick and still screwing up constantly? Should you be open and honest with him about that, considering that he may look up to you as in a sponsorship role?
Yeah. Okay, so to repeat the question, which is a really good, long question, should you be open with the guys you're working with? Do you sacrifice your stature you may have in their life? Absolutely. You know, like we used to say back in the day, nobody's perfect. You know, it's... I have a guy you can talk about too about that, but anyway, so if you're carrying a message, you know, from a point of your view of perfection, you know, crossing all the T's and dotting all the I's, I think you're missing the point. There's an author. Called Ernie Kurtz. He wrote his doctorate thesis about Alcoholics Anonymous, and his second book is called The Spirituality of Imperfection. It influenced me a lot. There are three books that influenced me: Big Book, this book, and another Spirituality of Imperfection, and another book. You don't have to be, you know, you don't need to look like a model. If it's basically, you know, if he looks up to you, that's fine. That's great, you know. You have to be able to, you know, carry your tail feathers with grace, right? You know, you need to be, you know. And there's a fable on that. We can talk about that later. But the Iron John, the fable I mentioned, is about that. It's about looking at your scars and your hurt with beauty. And see the beauty of it. And your bumbling ways are the grace of this program. It's, you know, the spiritual experience is not just for the guys who you know, give the program perfect lip service. It's not. You know, if you have humbly given your character defects to God, whatever he may or may not remove is you. And that is where you're supposed to be. Don't try to be something you're not. Don't try to be fake spiritual. Newcomers will pick that shit up like I did, you know, coming out of that blackout in a heartbeat. You know, absolutely. It's because they know they can't be perfect, right? So why not show them it's okay to be imperfect? Why not? And I watched the man I called my sponsor. He tried doing that, you know, not sharing about the stuff, and he stopped doing it because it's a whole lot of pressure. It's just a whole lot of pressure and a spiel. It's a spiel. So, you know, be broken, be imperfect. If the newcomer can see that you can be doing okay with your imperfectness, that's more stuff that you have you can use to help them with. And back. Yeah, he asked whether it matters. Homosexuals sponsor straight people, or men sponsor women, and you know, there's a piece of text that is hard to Google, but I found once. It's the 8 deadly sins. And it's from a tribe in somewhere in the desert, or monks in the desert, and they split pride into two. Your regular pride, and then something called vainglory. And vainglory is guilty as charged, or I have been. So vainglory is if you're sponsoring women and just to show that you can. I don't think that's the correct way of doing things. You know, if you are trying to reach a newcomer, you know, like I have done step work with women, sure, inventory and fifth step and stuff, yeah. But I need to be 100% certain, 100%, that I wouldn't try to use that to get them into bed with me. And I also, since then, that thing, that's only half of the picture. Because if they want me to sponsor them because I am vainglorious, it's not the thing. It's not the right thing. Sponsorship is based on trust. Absolutely based on trust. And not the trust of being able to, you know, he will not spill my secrets. I don't have any secrets anymore. It's not that. It's based on. I talk to my sponsor once in a while, and just to check in, okay? If the newcomer, you know, I have a hard time understanding how gay men are not men. You know, I it doesn't make any sense to me that they need a woman sponsor. You know, it just doesn't. There's, you know, I know half of the requirements, so that there's no chance ever that I'll ever do anything. But if they are doing it, I just go, no, you need somebody else. But then again, I don't sponsor anybody. I'm not anybody's sponsor. I'll go into that later, but I don't call myself a sponsor. I try not to. But if you can help, if you can be one of the village that helps somebody through a difficult time, or talks to somebody, then that's great. You're doing 12-step work. You don't have to have a title at all. And I think women help men, you know, and men help women in the fellowship and in the, you know, out for coffee afterwards and all that stuff. Another, yeah. Yeah, he asked, what do you do with newcomers that lie about their sobriety and stuff like that? I have some experience with that. And not just with that they're drinking, they're smoking pot or they are doing steroids. That's really popular in Iceland. They are calling you for a reason. They call me for a reason. If you want to have somebody who validates your take it easy laissez-faire ideas about Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm not the guy to talk to. I'm just not. And they call me for a reason. And they usually call me because they know I'm just as nuts or as they are, that I'm coming from a similar spot. And I don't, there's no, okay, so if I'm working with somebody and he has to fulfill a standard for me to be able to talk to them or give them direction, I'm not carrying the message to them, right? Because I am blocked. I believe in working with the willingness that the alcoholic has. And I'm lucky. I'm lucky. The asset that I have is I've done some stuff that is not nice, okay? And I've made amends to the best of my ability. I am what is known in the spiritual acrobatics of AA. I'm current with my amends. I believe that this stuff is either early days, but if you're talking about a long-term member of Alcoholics Anonymous that can't keep it together, it's about amends. It's about unmade amends. Alcoholism, you don't do this to yourself. You don't drink yourself to death or close to death or into bad health or your liver gangrenous because you want to, because it's fun or anything. You are compelled. And that compulsion comes from unmade amends with being all fucked up inside. And so there's a dude in Oslo and I told him, dude, yeah, you want to write a new inventory, you want to start from the beginning. I don't want to, I think that's a waste of time. I am allowed to be wrong about that. I am fully allowed to be wrong. Being wrong is a human right. Okay? If you don't use your human rights, they will take them away from you. Okay? If you don't use your rights. Okay? And I basically just told them, dude, let's talk again when you've flown back to Iceland and started making your amends. You don't need to show up for a job. You don't need to do anything. You have no... Nobody's demanding anything of you. You have nothing but time. You have nothing but money. And he has a lot of money, okay? And just do it. And it's intuition, basically. Use your intuition. And there is room for experimentation. Absolutely. Absolutely room for experimentation. Absolutely. There is experiment. Experiment. Have him do whatever. Do something else. Do something new. So there's no hard and fast answer to that question, but talk to some of the guys around you and say what they have to say. Squeal the newcomer to the sponsor. I squeal newcomers to the sponsor all the time. Doesn't matter whether the newcomer has 1 or 20 years or whatever. I don't care. Squeal the newcomer to the sponsor. Absolutely. Somebody who has the newcomer's trust. Sorry if I couldn't do any better than this.
Thank you.
So, yeah. The question was, how do you make amends to a person where you've been in an argument, but you weren't wrong? Okay? Yeah. Yeah. To make amends, if you use a dictionary, or somebody who has 25 years of dictionary in his head, amends means to make right. And you know, you are allowed to be wrong. You are allowed to be wrong, also in your amends. You don't have to do, you know, this. And let me, it's a delusion, it's idiotically delusional to think that you have to practice amends, okay? Just think about it. Just think a bit about amends. Amends is not something that you should be. If you start with the easy ones, if you take your grandma and you know, and you work your way up there, and then you end with a girl you stopped in kindergarten or whatever, you know, you are trying to be better at something that you shouldn't be good at. You just shouldn't be good at making amends. That's running the show. That's a spiel. The closest parallel to what I think you're asking about is, you know, is the story that I shared about the guy who was molested by his uncle. He was not willing to take chances with his alcoholism because he knows he has alcoholism, you know. When he shot that video, it was not about his uncle, right? He just didn't want to drink anymore. He did what he could do, you know. And we clean up our side of the street. And making amends is basically, and this is my humble opinion, it's not about saying sorry. It's not at all. There are a few requirements before that. You have to face the hurt, the damage caused, the hurt caused. That's the major thing. Fixing that with a $50 bill or whatever is secondary. You know, this is about facing life. Absolutely. Legal ramifications, as in going, so he might go to prison. The question was, how do you deal with helping somebody make amends where he might have personal consequences? I don't live in the U.S. Your legal system is totally different from the rest of the world. It is. It's common law is only used in Australia, New Zealand, the UK, and the US, and only partly here, interestingly enough. We have a civil law system. It's different. So I'm not a lawyer. There is this guy, one guy in that I know who made all his amends, but he didn't pay that back the tax map, and it was a lot of money. I think it was $2 million, and he was going out in AA and he was sponsoring guys, and you know, but he felt, you know, not real, and he. He's waiting to be called in to serve time. He's not at the top of the list in Iceland. We inmates vote in Iceland, in prison. Okay, it's a different system. Okay. he's willing, and the statute of limitations is about to run out, but he was willing. And the big book has a story about that too. You know. No more. One more question. I'm asking. He's my handler, by the way. How long do I sponsor a person? If somebody asks me for help, I will do the big book. I will read the big book if that's the thing to do. With retreads that know AA and drank again, that's usually not the thing to do. We will go and do other things. Not book stuff, even, not literature-based stuff. I would go and put down hardwood floors for one guy. And that's how his sobriety, his the only sobriety that he's ever had that stuck. We did hardwood floors, and that's why I do this. You know, when you say yes to working with somebody and he wants to do stuff, I believe that is forever. As long as he wants to talk to you, as long as he wants to talk to me, I am bound by a lot of things. I don't want to say honor, but I'm bound by a lot of things to be there for him. Absolutely. But there is no set time limit on how long step work takes. No. If you're thinking about the arts and crafts stuff, you know, the 4 to 9, which I call arts and crafts, you know, it's that there's no limit on that, but the point of the book, and it repeats it over and over and over again, is conscious contact with God. And conscious contact with God is not arts and crafts. It's just not. So do take a 5-minute break. Okay.